What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer. And you have just stepped inside my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, I discuss the topic of gamer hype and what the problem with gamer hype really is. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode with my news catch of the week. Gamers, this week I decided to tackle a topic that's not necessarily a specific headlining topic in the gaming news and in the part of the industry right now, but it is covering some aspects of what is in the news in this most recent, I would say, week or two. And that topic is the topic of gamer hype and what that possibly could be in a negative sense. And the reason why I thought about talking about this topic is because the last couple of weeks, we've seen what I would consider a mix of opposite ends of the same coin. So we've seen positive gamer hype and we've seen negative gamer hype. So same coin, two different sides. The first, we saw some excitement going into the PlayStation Showcase event and all the expectations that different gamers, like myself, had about what to see and what they expected or wanted out of the show. And then we got the show. And I would say, in my honest opinion, for the most part, you would see, at least what I have seen online, social media, the general consensus is that of a negative one. Not necessarily well received. I've seen a lot of X-bots, as we call the fanboys of the Xbox community, kind of jumping on PlayStation saying, man, what a horrible show, this, that, and the third. Even PlayStation fans, not fanboys or ponies, as they are likened to be called, but even PlayStation fans, some of them being disappointed and saying, yeah, you know, Sony really kind of dropped the ball with this show. Yeah, it's the worst one they've had in a while. This was just an extended state of play is all this really felt like. Seen a lot of things and comments like that over the last couple of weeks since Sony's event. Now, you look ahead at the next major showcase event, which is going to be Xbox, and that's going to be coming up on June 11th. So we are just barely a week away from that event. Can't wait for it. But I've even said it before in my Captain's Quarters episodes, gamers. If you've listened to me now and you've heard me talk about these different events, I pretty much every single episode where I cover my top favorite announcements and different things like that, I always tell you guys, you know, I gotta check my expectations and my hype level here. I'm very excited for certain things, but I gotta make sure I don't get myself overhyped and set myself up for disappointment. Now, don't get me wrong. Just last week's episode, I had on there my captain's decree was telling you the announcements that we didn't get that I wish that we had or that I was hoping that we would have gotten. But I also still said that I felt that it was a solid, just kind of an average showcase event. And that's part of the problem with gamer hype going into these events being overly positive. I think that we can get, for sure, hyped and excited about these things, but we have to check ourselves, because I think after a point where we don't check ourselves, we ultimately end up setting ourselves up for disappointment when things that we're hoping for or wanting to see don't happen. And I just have learned over the last few years that is more often than not. Sometimes, hey, you'll come away with the exact things that you wanted to see, some surprises. Oh, it'll just blow you away. But more often than not, I have seen in my experience where it doesn't always, most of the time, actually, does not follow through on what the expectations may be from a said individual. So with that being the case, I think that some people, a lot of people apparently, had a different expectation of what a Sony State of Play should be, which is, on one hand, a credit to Sony for how good they have done their State of Plays in the more recent years, and the kinds of announcements they've had at them and the amount of excitement and hype that they've generated from them. And also, it's a discredit to what Xbox has done, because Xbox has been kind of known for lackluster showcase events over the last same time period, to be honest. So when you have a expectation level set because of consistently outperforming your competitor, as Sony has done with Xbox over the last few years in events, their major events, I won't say State of Play, I'm specifically talking PlayStation Showcase events. I do think it kind of puts an unfair disadvantage towards Sony in that sense, because now they have to match or exceed their own bar that they have raised for themselves over the last few showcase events. So I get it. It's hard to do that on a consistent basis. But given the fact that they have been doing that and the fact that they have just a massive amount of first party options they could pull from to surprise people with show to show, year to year, I think that people have kind of grown accustomed to Sony doing that. And really, I can't tell you any one surprise out of this most recent event. Everything was kind of already either expected or, oh, okay, all right. Nothing massively like, whoa, that just blew me away. I had no idea. Like, in my opinion, Wolverine at the last showcase event. So you never saw anything like that this past showcase. But then you look at the opposite side of that same coin, and it's the now positive hype again, this time with the other guy, Xbox, the competitor. So now Xbox has done a great job of driving hype for this next showcase event, probably more so than they have in recent memory for me, to be honest with you. And the reason why is because of the social media advertisement they put out there for the event. And it has people honestly pretty much confirm, myself included, that they are Xbox hinting at a reveal or some kind of information about Fable. And obviously, we already had confirmation in a cinematic trailer a couple years ago that the game was going to be in active development and they were going through with a reboot of the franchise on Series X. Awesome. Well, it's one of the games people have complained about over the years that we haven't seen any updates on is, where is Fable? Why haven't we seen anything on it? Well, I think that we are finally going to get that in this next showcase event next week from Xbox, which is amazing. I am a massive fan of the Fable series. I cannot wait to play this new one. I just hope that they actually follow through on it, to be honest with you, as well as actually show some gameplay. No cinematic trailers, nothing like that, because again, it goes into this gamer hype that we create for ourselves, right? We're sitting there and we, oh man, Fable is going to be at this new event. That's what this dust means in the promotion that Xbox is doing for the next event. It's Fable. But then what if they don't show specific gameplay? Or what if they only show an updated story cinematic trailer with a release window? You know, there's always going to be something. So I think that ultimately, you know, right now, negativity, a negative cloud, I would say, is kind of hanging over Sony's most recent press conference. And all signs point to this being Xbox's round, I would say, or call it, to lose as far as showcase events. Not that they are necessarily going toe-to-toe or head-to-head with each other, but whether it's in my opinion, one of those unspoken things where you kind of know they're trying to, they look at each other. They know very, very, very much what the other is probably going to do, and they want to outperform the other. I think Xbox needs this, though. You then get to a point where which company needs it more? And David Jaffe, a director of the original God of War, creator of the God of War series, he was on record as saying some things about, oh, well, you know, look, hey, Sony has had, you know, nothing but consistency, basically. And I'm paraphrasing here. But he's basically said that Sony has earned the right to have a flop of a showcase event every once in a while. At this point, let them have a flop. You know, they've outperformed their competition and they've done amazing banger after banger. They're entitled to one every now and then. Everybody's got a dud. I get what he's saying. At first, I didn't. It took me some time to kind of wrap my head around what he was trying to say because of the verbiage he was using. But at the end of the day, I don't disagree with him. I'm not saying that it's okay to disappoint fans, but at the end of the day, I don't think that was by any means Sony's plan. I don't think they set out to disappoint anybody. But I think that as far as like the big major games to show off, there might be what is rumored to be a new showcase event coming later in the year that they're holding those titles for. And we already know that they don't have a big, massive fall lineup ready to go. Spider-Man 2 is supposed to be their big release this year, which I can't wait for either. But they may not just have a lot in the pipeline that is really worth showing right now. And I feel like the companies are very different, Sony and Microsoft. Microsoft is more of like, let's go right now. Let's show what we got. Yeah. And Sony is more like, you know what? Let's be patient with this. Let's make sure we have everything in order and everything is at the right time to promote or to show or to announce these things. So they're very different in the way they approach their announcements. And I respect that for each one of them in their own way. But I think that we as gamers, we just got to kind of look at both ends of the coin and at the end of the day, just kind of, sure, get excited for sure. It's fun to get excited about these events. But at the same time, I think that we just need to make sure we check ourselves and not allow ourselves to get lost in that hype, because that's the problem with gamer hype is more often than not, most of us, myself included in the past, tend to get lost in it. And then we can create disappointments for ourselves that really, it's not that bad. At the end of the day, we have a lot of great games that are showing off and are coming out. I mean, I mentioned five of my top games in my last episode last week. Check that out if you want the details on those. And there's even more than those five that were shown off that I thought still were very interesting to me. So I would just say that it works for me, or it has worked for me over the last year or so, to try to check myself and make sure that I am conscious of, hey man, get excited, have some things that you want to see, but don't allow yourself to get lost in it. So that's this week's Catch of the Week. Now let's go open up my captain's log and see what games I've been playing. Gamers, the first game I want to talk to you about this week is one that we have been sharing our time with very much over the last few weeks and few episodes, and that game is Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Jedi Survivor has been an awesome, amazing experience over the past just over a month since its release. And I preface by saying that for a reason, and you'll see why at the end of this segment. But let me just say I did spend almost 20 hours this past week playing the game, trying to finish it up and get the platinum. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that I did declare a platinum pursuit for the game, where I was going to make it a point that absolutely 100% I'm committing to getting this platinum trophy for this game. Well, over the course of this almost 20 hours this past week, obviously I did a lot. I mean, that's a lot of time. And most of what I did was finishing up the side stuff in the game, right? The collectible hunting for the Priorite, which is an element that is essentially a form of currency at the one shop. Doma is the character who you can trade this Priorite for certain items. And there is a trophy for purchase all items in Doma's shop, which requires you to get the amount of Priorite to swap for all those items. And let me just tell you, there's 100 Priorite in the entire game. Luckily, the developers Respawn were nice enough to limit most of that to the planet of Kobo. And sure, there is some on Coruscant and another location that you'll find out later in the game. But regardless, everything was so much easier once I got the upgrade for BD1 that allows the Hollow Map to show the location of treasures throughout the map. And that was amazing. That was a huge time saver. So a bulk of what my time was really hunting down those treasures, for the most part, because I had to do that for the trophy, which in turn goes towards my goal and my platinum pursuit of getting that platinum. I would have done it anyways, because I'm a completionist for the most part in some sense. But that is where a lot of my time was spent. And let me tell you, it wasn't all rainbows and butterflies, because there were some frustrations here or there on how to get certain Priorite to appear and access to other Priorite. There was a few there in the very end. I needed 5 Priorite. I got it all the way down to 5. And I ended up having to look up online, I'm not going to lie, of how to get these last ones that I could not access. So there's some crazy, let me just put it out there for you, a free buried treasure gaming tip right here. One of the Priorite, it'll show up on your map in the barn and the stables inside the barn. Well, the creatures that you can mount on Kobo and ride around, those you actually can put them inside a stall and they will stay there until you come back and want to mount them again and run around. You can do that. So I never really did that because I didn't have a reason to come back to the exact same one. There was really no benefit to that I saw. So I never did it. Well, when I tried to get the Priorite shard that was showing me on the map, it's right there and I'm standing on the icon according to where the map is. And it's not popping up. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. So I tried multiple times. I left the planet. I came back and all this stuff progressed in the story. Came back. Still wasn't there. So finally I was like, you know what? I'm looking this up. Well, gamers, here's the tip. Those mountable creatures, you have to actually stable one of them. And it has to be a bright colored one. So I got a red one. And you have to stable it in that front corner. And guess what? When you come back a little while later, they will have pooed. And then you can use the force to shuffle the poo around, and underneath there's a Priorite. So I'm not joking. That is 100% factual. So how Respawn thought that you would know to do that? I mean, I guess they were assuming that when the game tells you, hey, you can bring these creatures back here and stable them to have for you when you come back later. But to be so specific as to go after a bright colored one, I mean, I don't know. There was things like that that I encountered throughout my time of trying to mop up the last trophies here and the collectibles. And, oh man, I haven't even got to the worst of it yet, gamers. But outside of collectible hunting and going after the treasures and all the different force tears and, you know, which included combat and platforming challenges, all that stuff, that stress-inducing stuff that was some of it very frustrating, other ones, you know, the legendary enemies all gone and defeated all those, that finished the last ones of those this past week as well. Every little thing, check that box, trophy unlocked, I'm good to go. I get all the way to the end of the game, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and finish the story. I'll mop up the last little bit here, like the bounty hunters and things like that. I'll do that post-game. I want to see how this story ends. And positive content right now, gamers, let me just say that the finale and the climax in this story, the story in general overall is just so amazing. I can't wait to really get into the details of it with you. Not spoilers, obviously, but detailed discussion about that story and my review, which will be coming soon, because I did beat Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Let me just put that out there real quick. I did beat the game. I finished the story. And man, the whole game was just amazing as far as stories, characters, all that. But that climax, whew, man, it was just one amazing thing after another in that game. It was just, I can't express to you how amazing it was. As a Star Wars fan, just in general, a fan of the story and these characters, it was just awesome to experience a lot of these different story beats, the planets and different things that you have to do, certain boss fights. I mean, it was just I couldn't ask for anything better than what I was given. And Respawn just outdid themselves when it comes to this game, to be honest, in that regard. Now, when we get to post-game, I have to tell you, again, I said before, the bounty hunters. There are 16 bounty hunters that you get credit for and get checked off as a total in the game that you have to go after and defeat in combat. Well, at this point in the game, I had 11 out of 16, 5 left. Long story short, you have to go to Cage, who gives you the bounties, and she is a character that you can meet in the Cantina, Pontoon Saloon, and basically you have to talk to her, but you also can trade in bounty pucks that you get when you defeat bounties and trade them into her for different upgrades for BD1, different splicing, as well as different upgrades for your blaster. Now, I wasn't really worried about that. I was just worried about completing all of the bounties. Well, you have to talk to her, which is a separate interaction icon than the shop icon. And the bounties, as you progress in the game's story, that's how they are unlocked via conversation with her. So you have to go back after, you know, major story moments, keep checking back with her. Well, gamers, let me just tell you that patch 5, which is the most recent patch for the game, came out around May 18th. And patch 5 brought with it a whole brand new bug that screws up the bounties. That if by that patch 5 release, if you had not already completed the bounties, all 16, then guess what? You were locked out of being able to complete the rest of them. So that is infuriating to me, and I was absolutely and am absolutely furious about it, because I only have 2 trophies left in the game, and then the platinum obviously unlocks when those 2 unlock. And those 2 trophies, one is for scanning every enemy in the game, which are the bounties are included in that. So if I can't fight and defeat the bounties, then I'm not going to get that scan all enemies trophy. And there is also a trophy for completing all bounties. So they go hand in hand, and therefore both go hand in hand to getting the platinum. So I am locked out right now of getting that platinum trophy. I'm so frustrated. So FYI, listeners, if you're playing Star Wars Jedi Survivor, doesn't matter a platform, PS5, Xbox, PC, as far as I know, it's a universal issue. Respawn is aware of it, and 2 weeks later after that, patch 5 released and people have making them aware of it, they still have not fixed it to my, at this point, it's just, so heads up there, in case you were looking to platinum or get all 1000G in gamer score of Star Wars Jedi Survivor, you will probably not be able to right now because of this lockout. It's a very frustrating ending to my playtime with Jedi Survivor. Will it affect my score when I do my review? We shall see. But that was my time in Jedi Survivor this past week. Now let's turn the page of my captain's log and check out my thoughts on finally, a year and a half later, playing Far Cry 6. Gamers, the Far Cry franchise has long been one of my favorites in all of gaming. Since the 360 and Far Cry Instinct Predator and its release, I have absolutely loved this series. The only misstep for me was Far Cry 2, which I, no matter how many tries I gave it, I just could not get into it. So when Far Cry 6 came out a year and a half ago now, I had pre-ordered it, was looking forward to it, even more so maybe than normal, because Giancarlo Esposito, the actor who plays El Presidente in this game, he's one of my favorite actors. I've met him in person at a Comic-Con. I loved him in Revolution, which is a TV show from the early 2010s. If you didn't ever watch it, check it out. It's pretty good, but he's at his best. Giancarlo Esposito is really good as a villain in pretty much anything he plays. So when it came time to announce that Far Cry 6's villain, which the villains are what Far Cry is really best known for, most known for, outside of their amazing open worlds, I was super stoked. Well, as fate would have it, as it does with me with a lot of games, I just did not end up playing Far Cry 6. There was many other games around the same time. I don't remember the specifics of what they were at this point. But for one reason or another, one game or another, time has gone by a year and a half, and I had yet to still play Far Cry 6. Now, I was talking with my good friend Logan Phoenix over at the Graveyard Gamer podcast, a gaming podcast right here on Spotify and many other gaming podcasting sites that you can check out. He's got a great show. If you like mine, you'll love his. Check it out. But him and I were talking in this past week or so about Far Cry 6, and I'm just like, I told him, I said, man, I cannot believe that as much as I love that series, I have yet to still play Far Cry 6, not even just to boot it up and try it out. Well, this past week, as I mentioned, I did beat Star Wars Jedi Survivor, so it kind of opened up some opportunities for me. I don't always like to go just straight from one main game to the next main focal game. Sometimes I like to have a little bit of fun for a few days here in between, dabble in a few things that I maybe wanted to check out. Well, this week, Far Cry 6 was one of those games that I dabbled in. I only spent about 2 hours to play what I did, but I thoroughly enjoyed what I did play. It was enough for me to select my character, which I did choose the male Danny. Danny is the name of the main character in the game, and you can choose male or female. And I will admit that when the game was first being marketed and advertised, all the trailers and everything that you saw had a female Danny, and I honestly thought that it just kind of made sense that, you know what, maybe I'm going to play as a female in this game. Typically, I'll play as a male. I like to try to emulate or replicate myself or feel like as if I am that character when I play games, so typically that's why I go with a male character. But in this Far Cry 6, I was like, you know what, this kind of almost feels like it should be a female lead. Well, by the time we got to the actual game, and I'd already read and heard and been told by Graveyard Gamer himself, yeah, it doesn't affect anything in the game, no story, nothing. It's literally just a different character model and voice actor. So knowing that, I was like, all right, well, in that case, I'm going to go ahead and be the male Danny. So I chose a male character, and the opening of the game is, like most Far Cry games, they actually have a pretty cool opening. Very epic, great introduction to El Presidente, Giancarlo Esposito himself, and basically it's a tutorial. You know, you have to fight your way through and sneak, really, mostly your way through the city and the sewers to get to this boat, to get out of there, to get away from the oppression and the soldiers that El Presidente has sent going around this different city area, and honestly, they're just kind of killing people, your neighbors, your friends. It's just pretty crazy. So you get on this boat. A really cool cutscene happens, and let's just say that Danny ends up washing on the shores of this island. Not the main island that you're going to get to eventually, but a small island that's kind of like what I would consider the prologue island. And a lot of games do this nowadays. Valhalla, Assassin's Creed did it, and even Assassin's Creed Odyssey, going back to it. I mean, they usually start you out in this prologue kind of area where you could spend, you know, 10 to 15 hours doing everything and scouring these smaller areas before getting out into the massive open world. Well, obviously, like I said, I only played 2 hours. So by the time I got to this point, it was maybe a half hour out of that 2 hours. Over the course of the next hour and a half, I did get an opportunity to enjoy some more of the story, meet some of the characters and amigos that you can befriend, the different partners, I'll call it, the alligator that you can have go around with you, and you can sick it on enemies to tear them up and take them out as you are hiding in the bushes. And that was pretty cool. I always thought that looked cool from the previews. And then just in general, it's typical, in a good way, Far Cry gameplay, going through this beautiful open world. It was very reminiscent of the jungle environments of Far Cry 3. But I'm okay with that because it still has its own flavor to it, its own style. And the reason I say that is because this area is very much interspersed with bunkers and different hidden passageways and pathways that are all about the rebellion that was taking place in the 60s, according to in-game lore. And so you see these different markers throughout the pathways that indicate this is a pathway created by the rebels back in the day. You also have the love of cars and different music and things like that that are kind of like 1950s vintage cars that are what's being driven around in this area. So that's awesome. I also got an opportunity to try out riding horseback, which is something new to the Far Cry series. And it actually was really cool. I was kind of worried, or not worried, but kind of curious really what it was going to be like riding on horseback from a first person viewpoint. But I felt like Ubisoft did a pretty good job of it. Gunplay was solid as usual. And just in general, picking up the different quests that I had and the different asks of different characters and the crafting mechanic in the game, you can go to workbenches and with different resource items that you pick up in the world, you can craft and do different things and mod your weapons. And it was just a lot going on there, and I thoroughly was enjoying it. It's definitely a game that I see myself playing to its fullest if I ever get the opportunity. But I at least am glad that I gave it the 2 hours that I did, because now that I can actually say I played the game, I feel a lot better about it. It doesn't mean that I'm just writing it off and that was it. I really do want to get back to it one day and just kind of, this is my focal game and I'm going to focus on it and beat it. So we'll see what happens. But that was one of many other games or experiences that I kind of dabbled in between focal games, as I mentioned. And the next one is actually a demo that was just released recently of a game that I was looking forward to before. But after having played this demo, whew, find out what my thoughts were on Alone in the Dark. Gamers, Alone in the Dark is another franchise that I've been a fan of since the PlayStation 1 days, and Alone in the Dark, One-Eyed Jack's Revenge. And man, I just gotta say that title sparked a lot of fun pranks on the phone when I worked at GameStop way back in the early 2000s, like circa 2001, 2002, somewhere in there. But that was my first foray into the Alone in the Dark franchise. I was always interested in it because it was said to have inspired Shinji Mikami and the Resident Evil series, and Shinji Mikami being the creator of the Resident Evil series. So I was inspired myself to see what it is that had Shinji Mikami wanted to make his own version of that. And look, Alone in the Dark, One-Eyed Jack's Revenge, it was a pretty decent game. You know, it was a PlayStation 1 survival horror game, exactly like what you would expect as far as comparisons to Resident Evil are concerned, and Silent Hill and the third-person survival horror games of that era. Now, since then, to my knowledge, there was only ever the next Alone in the Dark game released on the 360 and PS3 era. Now, I did like that game. I'm not going to lie. I actually thoroughly enjoyed that game, and it was very much focused on, hey, your inventory system is done in-game via the interior of Edward Carnby, the main character, the protagonist of the game and the series. Edward Carnby, his trench coat, the interior of that is how you're going to access and look at your inventory system. And it was just a lot of unique, different stuff in that game. But overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a pretty decent experience. But unfortunately, it did not perform well financially, and the series has been dormant ever since. Well, when this game was first announced last year, I got super excited about the fact that they were trying to relaunch the Alone in the Dark series. It sounded like they were, the developers, really going for reaching what that last Alone in the Dark on 360 and PS3 just could not. And just that sweet spot. Finding what really made Alone in the Dark special to begin with. Well, I can tell you, after I had seen different trailers and whatnot of this new one, I thought they were on the right path. And after actually having played the demo that was surprisingly announced and released last week, I can tell you with 1000% confidence, gamers, that if you are a survival horror fan, you cannot miss this game. I'll just tell you, the demo itself only lasts about 15 minutes, depending on how much you really explore. You play as Grace, which is a young girl, and she is a character within the main game. And in the main game, you only choose between Edward Carnby and another protagonist, the niece of the uncle whose mansion you go to try to investigate his murder. Well, in this demo, you don't play as either of them. You only play as Grace, the little girl. And it's just really cool and creepy. You start out as her in her bedroom, and she's making this mask, which in and of itself is creepy. And the game is set in New Orleans in the early 20th century. And just that setting and that vibe and just something about New Orleans is creepy. You know, the swamp and the bog and just everything about it is just, oh, man. So I'm sitting there and... First off, the graphics are just excellent, extremely well detailed. The voice acting is awesome. The music is great. The controls are tight and the creepiness is off the charts. I'm first exploring Grace's room and there's, you know, baby dolls with their plastic heads popping off when I bump into a stroller, and there's slamming doors and loud noises from outside in the hallway and things like that. And let me just tell you, when I go out to that hallway, and I see a door that is cracked open and it's a bathroom, I am terrified of walking into that bathroom. Let me just say that. But I cannot tell you how much I loved this demo. If this is just a tiny, teeny little morsel of what to expect from the main game, whew, man. If you were like me and love survival horror, then gamers, we are in for a treat. Come October 17th when this game releases. I just absolutely cannot wait to get my hands on the full game. And I got to tell you, depending on how Alan Wake 2 pans out, it may have a run for its money when it comes to Alone in the Dark, because Assassin's Creed comes out, I think, the 12th. And then we also have, oh, I'm sorry. I said the 17th for Alone in the Dark. The 17th is actually Alan Wake 2. And then on the 25th is when Alone in the Dark comes out. So my point being, when it comes to scary games during the season of horror in October, oof, I'll have a week to have played Alan Wake 2 at that point, but man, depending on how much I'm into that, Alone in the Dark may, just off of this demo, have enough going for it to draw me away from it. But man, if you haven't checked out the demo, definitely check it out. Now for my final game this week, let's talk about Horizon Forbidden West Burning Shores. Gamers, it's been a little bit over a month since I last explored the Burning Shores with Aloy and the universe in the world of Horizon. But having beaten Star Wars, that was kind of always my goal, is to go back to Burning Shores, finish up the expansion, and then move on back to Hogwarts Legacy and try to complete as much of it as I possibly can, if not the story, the main story itself, by the time Final Fantasy 16 releases and consumes my soul. So, as it were, I did decide finally to get back to Horizon after dabbling in a couple of other experiences, and I ended up putting another 4 hours into my time with the game and the expansion, and that's a total of 12 hours now that I've put into Burning Shores, just for perspective. Now, I know that you could play through the story portion of it, just the main story portion, and probably beat it within that time frame, but for me, especially in the world like Horizon, I mean, it's hard for me to just go from point A to B, and there's nothing wrong if you do that. It's just for me, I can't help but explore or want to get all the collectibles or find all the different really cool different things that you can do within the world, because Horizon just always, in my opinion, has done a great job of having fun, purposeful side activities to do in the game world. And that's no different in Burning Shores, even though it's an expansion. I came across in this 4 hours, I did do some more progression of the main story, which let me just say, I did do some more progression in the overall main story, but let me just say that as well, that main story is just really, really awesome. And just a perfect continuation of where the main story left off after beating Horizon Forbidden West. But as far as side activities, I came across a few new ones. So if you played the base game, you'll know that there are different radio signals that you can latch onto, and you have to kind of sync them up, and then you get images that show you what that location looked like. before the fall of man, basically, and everything went to ash, as they call it, the time of ashes. So it's the same thing here, but the unique thing about this DLC is that you actually access them and follow and trace the signal via flight. So you're on the back of typically like a Sunwing is what you can control and fly around in. And it's just awesome, just floating and just kind of coasting in the air. It just really feels really cool. But as you're following and tracking these signals, you get to see obviously different landmark locations in Los Angeles, which is where Burning Shores is, you know, taking place in what used to be Los Angeles, at least. So that's really cool. I really enjoyed that. And then there was a nice side quest that I picked up as far as a collectible that you can find a few of throughout the course of Burning Shores' landmass, if you will. And that is a hunt for a figurine set. And I found the first one yesterday, and it was pretty cool. There was essentially a collectible shop that has been obviously overrun and dilapidated that you find your way into. And that's what initiates the side quest, is you read a data point that's in there, and it explains about the shop owner who had somebody take this specific action figure, and it's worth X amount of money. And, you know, oh, I think that the last time I had seen, or the find, track my product, or whatever it was, kind of like find my phone or find your phone, the app for the iPhone. So it's kind of like that is what I picked up, is what he said he had going on with his product. And it was last known to be in the parking garage that was northeast down the street from the shop. So I went northeast down the street, and boom, Aloy confirms it. Oh, this looks like the place where the parking garage that was mentioned in that note. All right, cool. Let's go check it out. So after going through a wonderful set of stalkers, the invisible or cloaked enemies that you can meet in the base game as well, there was an action figurine, and it was a Velociraptor. And apparently, I guess, it's just some kind of a, I don't want to say it's a Jurassic Park kind of homage, but it's something like that is what it seems like, or some kind of like the Land Before Time or the Land of the Lost, that kind of a setting is what it seems like reading the description and the data point you get when you find the collectible. So you have a whole set of these different action figures that I guess are dinosaurs or characters in that universe of wherever that action figure takes place from. So I thought it was pretty cool. Definitely a pretty cool collectible set. And in addition to the signals that you can trace by flying around and tracking them that way, that was really cool. I finally made it to the landmark of the Hollywood sign, which is something I was really looking forward to when the DLC was first announced. The fact that it was going to be set in Los Angeles and it showed the Hollywood sign, that was really cool. Some really cool story moments there as well. I did my first Relic Ruin, which if you've played the base game, Relic Ruins are these massive structures that are very puzzle-y, and it's environmental puzzle solving is what it really boils down to, is figuring out how to scale the environment and, you know, usually having to find a data point that has a passcode for you to access the door. And one really cool thing is there were different ornaments that you find in the base game that when you brought them back to the desert, the Las Vegas Strip, it would put, there was one for basically each holiday. Well, I found a new one in this Relic Ruin that was for what seemed to be St. Paddy's Day. And I thought that was pretty cool. They were still continuing that. You even meet also another character that if you played the other games and the content from the other games, you'll recognize this character. So that was pretty cool. But in general, I just absolutely loved Burning Shores, all 12 hours. But obviously this week, specifically the 4 hours that I've just recently played. And, oh man, it's a great experience. I can't wait to keep going through it. I am what looks to be about 2/3 of the way done with it. So I'm hoping that by next week's Captain's Quarters, I'll be able to let you know that I finished it and maybe get a quick review out there for you guys. But that was what I played this past week in my Captain's Log. Now, out of all of that, let's see what my highlight of the week was. Gamers, even though I had a lot to choose from as far as a highlight this past week in my gameplay sessions, I got to tell you, it really wasn't a contest for me. It was really no question that completing Star Wars Jedi Survivor, that was my highlight of this past week. And I get it. It was blemished with the issue with patch 5 and not being able to finalize the platinum pursuit that I had going on. And, you know, that is very frustrating for sure. And I am not happy about it. But I am not going to allow it to detract away from the excitement and the amazingness, first off, that was the climax, the story in general of Jedi Survivor, but especially the way it was handled in that climax, the emotion of it, the specifics that happened within it. And I just absolutely loved the locations that you go to, the things that transpire, the boss fights. I mean, there was just so much to love in those final hours of that game. Not to mention the whole game itself, but especially this past week specifically, and picking out a highlight. I mean, that was it, is those final hours of Jedi Survivor, the feeling of like, oh man, the sense of completion of finishing the game. And even though I didn't get the Platinum Trophy and the bounties all completed, it does feel a very much sigh of relief in getting all of those prior right and being able to purchase every item in Doma's shop. That was a big deal for me. So completing Star Wars Survivor and just enjoying that amazing story. Now let's go open up a chest of buried treasure, gaming secrets and tips I have for you in Jedi Survivor. Gamers, this week is a tip I'd like to share with you that is a very interesting one to me because it really gave me a lot of head-scratching moments and frustration, to be honest with you, about three different times over the course of my playthrough of Jedi Survivor. Now, this is going to be a puzzle solution to a crypt, the Crypt of Irma, to be specific, that is located on the planet Jeddah. And I'm not going to go into all the details of exactly how to figure out this puzzle, because I think it's insane that the developers set this puzzle up and expected you to connect the dots here without any kind of further, I don't want to say hand-holding, but at least just some kind of clue or hint. So when you go into the Crypt of Irma, it's actually a pretty cool layout and design, and there's a bunch of basically mummified caskets and bodies all around, and you go kind of down this little ramp area into an area that is kind of circular in design. And on the wall, you're going to see what looks to be 8 different squared shapes. And you're going to see the fact that you can interact with them using the Force. And so you can actually pull them out with the Force or push them back in using the Force. Well, me, when I first got there, I'll pull all 8 of them out, push all 8 in at the same time with the Force, and that'll be it. That's got to be it. Nah, that was not it. Well, of course, I surmised at that point there had to be some kind of pattern. Okay, well, the developers, I'm sure, have some kind of clue hidden around here to let me know what that pattern is. That is not the case. The pattern is way off in the desert in Jeddah in a completely different location. Now, you'll know when you see this pattern after you've seen the puzzle and know the solution to it that, oh, that's what it is. But I'm just going to simply tell you, to save you all that time, the solution to this puzzle. So there's 2 rows of these squared levers, in a sense, that you can pull out of the wall, right? 2 rows of 4 on top of 4. So what you're going to do is you're going to pull out using the Force the leftmost on the top row and the rightmost on the top row, as well as numbers 2 and 3, the 2 center squared pieces in the middle on the bottom row. These 4, once you pull them all out, boom, that unlocks the door and gives you access to actually a decent amount of stuff. There's a fish from Scuva Stev that you can find down here. There's also a skill upgrade. There's a data bank entry. I mean, there priorite, there's all kinds of stuff down here. So it really baffled me that the developers did not actually do a better job, in my opinion, of kind of giving you some hints or some breadcrumbs here or there. But regardless, that is the solution to save you some time if you were like me and were like, what in the world do I do here? Top row, numbers 1 and 4. Bottom row, numbers 2 and 3. Now let's go check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, this week on Captain's Decree, I really just kind of want to talk about my frustration with patches. And look, I cannot pretend to understand what it is to be a developer and how much time and the intricacies that go into putting out a game first off and developing a game. Secondly, when you identify issues and bugs, having to fix those and then find a way to have those be fixed without causing other bugs. I understand it's just part of gaming. I get that. But, and admittedly, you know, I've seen a lot of these things from a distance over the years where I have not been affected by them, but I read about them all the time. And I always think to myself, man, I'm lucky that this did not happen to me. Now, don't get me wrong. This is not the first. Star Wars Jedi Survivor is not the first glitched trophies or achievements or something along those lines that I've had happen to me in my career. It's just the most recent. But what frustrates me is, how is it possible? Like, it's just, there are three trophies ultimately tied together for this right now. For me, you know, the three I mentioned earlier, the platinum itself, as well as scanning all enemy types and defeating all the bounties. So it's just frustrating. I don't understand how 3 weeks later, we still don't have any kind of update. That's, I guess, more frustrating to me than anything. May 18th was the last update for Jedi Survivor, patch 5, and we have yet to have an update since. And the most frustrating part is the game was out for barely 3 weeks at the time that patch 5 came out. And my point being, you released 5 patches in 3 weeks, and then now you've had 3 weeks with not a single patch. But yet, this massive affecting trophy achievement situation here, where a lot of people are not able to progress further until you fix this. And it's just, I don't understand how we could go that long without any kind of patch, any kind of update or communication even from Respawn. Look, I get it. From day one on the 18th, 19th, when people first started experiencing this bug, they did acknowledge it and say, we are aware of this and we are working hard to try to figure it out and to release a new update. I get it. And again, I can't pretend to understand what it takes to do that fix. But at the same time, you got to think that, like, man, I mean, 3 weeks now, guys, like, how long is it really going to take to fix something like this? I mean, and at least to have no communication, that I feel like that should have at least been something that you stayed on top of. Hey, we are still working on it. We don't want you to think we forgot about you. There's a patch coming. The release window for this patch is this time frame. And again, I get it. They probably don't want to set expectations and have people upset if they can't meet that release window for the patch. I get all that. I'm just kind of venting to you listeners right now my frustration of, like, come on, man. It's sitting there, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, feeling incomplete to me. Not just from a trophy standpoint, but also from the game standpoint. I'm typically a completionist is the way I approach my games, and I try to do everything in a given game that I'm playing through, and I can't even do it. It's not even like it's my decision to not do it. I'm being withheld from doing it at this point. And that's just truly frustrating. So, you know, going forward, it's one of those things where, look, Jedi Survivor was already delayed a month from the end of March to the end of April. And it had, again, as I stated, 5 patches in the first 3 weeks of release, and it still has issues and has not been fixed yet. So, it kind of begs the question, was it actually ready to release, or maybe they should have pushed it back until this summer? And maybe then, I'm not saying it would have been bug-free or perfect, but maybe then a lot of these issues could have been avoided. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Instagram at lostatseagaming and on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number 1. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.